The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Thursday, 21 hours later from you last heard this voice, and we're happy to have you with us wherever you are around the world. There's a lot happening, not just here, but worldwide. This is, again, remember, a worldwide terraforming operation, as it were, of the planet and its people. And now, after last night's conversation with Erica Kahn, our MIT microbiologist specialist, we know that, unfortunately, there is no more barrier between the so-called animal world and humans. They're passing things back and forth, and we don't know how badly this is going to turn out, but the potential for all mammalian life form, and maybe all life form, warm-blooded, to become infected with this spike protein and or virus is apparently on the table now. And this is not good. Every day, in every way, it seems to be getting worse. What we're going to do this hour is be joined by Erica Kahn again. And I've been wanting to play the recent interview that Dr. Michael Yeadon gave in the UK, an urgent warning to the world. So we're going to play part of that and stop and comment on it as we work our way through it. But first, there's something else that I came across yesterday. We posted it, and we've got more on that. And that is quite simply the Australian documents that prove they, at least they, knew full well that the COVID-19 was on the schedule. And they knew this 5 years ago. And we can prove that, and we will. Erica, welcome back. Thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Hello, Jeff. Good to be back.
Okay, everyone. Take a look in guests, if you will, and look under Erica Kahn at the top. I'm going to go there myself and make sure. Oh, I put that nurse back up at the top of the homepage. I want you all to see that in case some of you missed it. It's important. It talks about the spreading issue between the vaxxed and the unvaxxed. And there's going to be a real sharp, emotional, perhaps violent division before this is all over. That's a reasonable guess, I think, at this point. Under Erica's name, if you click on that, let's see if it works. He doesn't have it. Okay, do we have it? Not yet. All right, I'm going to have to reset my page. Sometimes my particular service doesn't update its server. It should work. Proof Australia knew about COVID-19 5 years ago. All right? See if you can get that to come up. In the meantime, I'm going to go find it, and we'll just read it to you. You can take a look at the actual documentation. Erica, tell us what it basically says. I'll read the text in just a moment. It's rather clear.
Yes, it's a government website from Australia describing authorization to employ a injectable that they are referring to as a poison, which apparently, according to the TGA or Therapeutic Goods Association, which is the equivalent of the FDA in Australia, anything that's injectable is considered a poison. But it very clearly states or describes the COVID-19 vaccine, SARS-CoV-2, big bold letters, that it is to be administered, and it is referred to as a poison. And more alarming, though, is the date where it seems to have been initiated in 2016.
It's quite clear, Link. It's there.
And this is still available to look at.
Yeah. I'm putting it up on a separate page now, so we will have it here in case someone tries to make it go away. It'll be here. It's right there. Public Health Act of 2016. This is the Government of Australia. Instrument of authorization to supply or administer a poison. And again, that's their nomenclature for any injectable. A poison, and then in brackets, SARS-CoV-2. And another set of brackets, COVID-19, close brackets. This is 2016. All right, now I'll read a little bit more here. Public Health Act 2016, instrument of authorization, again, authorization to supply or administer a vaccine, we'll call it, an injectable, SARS-CoV-2, COVID-19. So how did they know in 2016? Can you tell me, anybody? I think you can. This has been in the works for years and years, maybe decades. Started out and it gained momentum, technology improved. And this is, as we know now, this is diabolically sophisticated and dangerous, extremely dangerous. And we're going to hear that from Dr. Michael Yeadon in just a couple of minutes. Anything new today, Erica, on this spreading issue and the exposure of people who have been vaccinated? We've got the vaccidents now. Cliff High is calling them vaccidents. Automobile crashes, single car crashes. Truckers are saying we've never seen anything like this. Cars running off the road, into trees, whatever. Single car, often with a single driver. That's not good either.
Yeah, I'm still perusing reports of people having bleeding disorders, a lot of kids. And these are not just trickles. These are gushing nosebleeds coming
kids.
Out of a lot of it's kids, but you know, adults, men and women too, and not people that have been vaxxed, just people who have been around other people who have been vaxxed. There were two very large Facebook groups that were exclusively dedicated to women having these menstrual issues disappeared overnight.
Aha, I knew it. They're gone.
I mean, one had 7,000, the other had 9,000, gone. Overnight. So this
Facebook
stuff is being censored.
Yeah. Facebook
is
one of the most
evil. They know
they've
got a problem. They're trying to cover it up.
They're one of the most evil entities on the planet, Facebook. Make no mistake about it. I think all of you know that. It's bad.
I mean, we don't know why these bleeding things are happening, particularly in the unvaxxed. I mean, is something being passed back and forth? It seems so. But we don't know. I mean, is the food supply contaminated? Is it this 5G stuff? I mean, we've got to look at all possibilities because we know there's an agenda.
Right.
I think, you know, the additional evidence or story that came out about the 5G components having labels of COVID-19 on their face, the face of these components designated for 5G towers, what's that about?
I don't know. I don't know. I've got a story that's actually, I saw this story, it's got to be close to a year ago. It's about a sounds like an Irish guy working on a cell tower, And he's got a circuit board in his hands, and it says, printed right on the board in the upper left corner. You'll see it when I post it. Some of you may remember the story. It says COVID-19.
Yeah.
COVID-19. So what is that about? Now, I must also say that there's a big print out by Reuters attempting to debunk that, claiming it's just an old circuit board from a television cable top box that somebody printed it on there. And unfortunately for Reuters, Reuters is owned by the Rothschilds. They bought it in the 1800s.
Yep.
In the last 20 years, they bought Associated Press. They own the so-called digital media now. And it's not a good thing. So Reuters, to me, when the Reuters fact-checking team checks in with something to allegedly expose something, all they're doing to me is proving that it's real.
Right.
I don't trust any fact-checking forum. I think they're all bogus now. I think it's very clever to take them over by the other side, and I think that that's what they've done. Just like Snopes. Snopes is probably the worst of all, but they're just traditionally the worst of all. But Reuters is not to be trusted.
Not at all, no.
Okay. Anything else you want to add? We'll jump into...
Let's get into Michael Yeadon.
He is a former vice president of Pfizer Pharmaceuticals and director of science. All right, I think that was his title, something very close to that.
R&D or something,
something like that. Yeah, he was. In other words, he was the top of the ladder, working both administrative and scientific. The guy's brilliant. He's a brilliant scientist. Now I'm going to start more or less in the middle of this particular interview, and we'll just follow it along, and we'll stop. And I'd like Erica to comment on various parts of it. I'll share something if I have any ideas that might illuminate anything further from what he's pointing out. So here we go with Dr. Michael Yeadon on video. This is real important stuff.
What I would say is, if the vaccine is effective, and certainly the trials purport to show that, and I'm not in a position to say that that's not true, although I know some people say it's not true, but if the vaccines are effective, it's not possible to get what's called epidemic spreading. It doesn't matter, even if there were 20%, say, who are vulnerable, they might be vaccination failures. A percentage of people vaccinated don't become immune. That's true. But it would be very unlikely that they would acquire the virus, because how could they? As I just described 10 minutes ago, they would need to encounter a source of infectiousness, and there's very little of it, and there are very few people who could be it. So I don't even understand the assumptions they've used in this most recent model that could possibly produce that outcome.
Doctor, let's talk about what we've been observing in the short term. I know one of the great concerns that we all share is what the long-term effects of this brand new experimental, some would call it a gene therapy injection, is. But we've been seeing, and you and Dr. Shushant Bhakti have described, short-term adverse reactions. What have we been seeing, how does that comport with some of the projections that you all were making?
Yeah, certainly.
Now I should mention that this is about April 23rd, so it's about a week old, and the cascade of people with these I don't even want to call them adverse reactions. They're worse. They're injuries, right, Erica? These people are being injured.
Yeah, some of them are debilitating, disabling, crippling.
Crippling, as in paralysis. Understand, everyone, we're not joking here. This isn't like a little headache that goes away after an hour or
a day.
No,
some of these people are struggling with symptoms weeks, months after having had the shot.
This is not good. All right, and what we're doing is we are tracking, as are many others, people who are simply coming into contact with those who have been vaxxed and showing serious, we'll call them symptoms right now. Okay, back to Michael Yeadon.
So, yes, I've been working with a number of scientists and physicians. We've called ourselves, I think it's COVID, Doctors for COVID Ethics. And we've written a number of times to the European Medicines Agency. That's the agency that regulates medical products. We noticed just through the network, we were hearing that a number of people were suffering what we would call thromboembolic disorders. So disorders of blood clots and of bleeding, oddly enough. And I was looking at some of the basic science, and I, with horror, I came across a number of papers that were written between 2000 and 2010 about the spike proteins on the earlier SARS virus, 2003. And I realized to my horror that the spike protein is not a passive protein that the virus uses to anchor onto a sort of docking receptor on the outside of human cells, which...
Let me just interrupt that. This is very important. Those spikes on the graphics of this alleged virus on the tip have this protein. And everyone thinks it's a protein that is used to gain entry to the cell. But it's much worse and more pathological than that.
Uses then to enter the cell. It's not a passive protein at all. It's biologically active. Spike protein is biologically active. It can be described as fusogenic. That is, it prompts cells that it contacts to stick together, even including blood platelets. And as you probably will gather, once blood platelets start sticking together, that can be the initiation of a blood clot. And furthermore, those spike proteins are capable of initiating some of the steps of the blood coagulation pathway. So this is potentially a lethal combination.
We've seen this now how many times? How many dead people right now are in their coffins or in an urn of ash who have had a blood clot, gone to their brain, gone to their heart, gone to their lungs, and they're dead? He just explained the mechanism. Very simple. And I go back to that one doctor in Miami, 56 years old, excellent health, played tennis all the time, dropped dead. And they found when they did an autopsy, he had virtually zero platelets. Now, I don't know what that means, but he had no platelets, and yet he dropped of a heart attack. So this is a complicated issue. Erica, your thoughts on all this?
Yeah, the spike protein itself, they've determined, has sequences on it that will interact with platelets. It will cause platelets to clump to it. And then somewhere along that process, it provokes the immune system to make antibodies against your platelets.
So you're going to war against your own platelets. Wow.
Yeah, so you're seeing this paradox where you start forming clots, and then you run out of platelets, secondarily, the endothelium, which is the lining of your blood vessels, become leaky, and you start to bleed out. A lot of people are having swelling, and so...
Give me an example of swelling. Where?
In the legs. I mean, some people, their legs just blow up, with fluid. I mean, they have these leaky blood vessels. People are having bloody diarrhea, so as if their intestinal linings are just, that's another barrier that the spike proteins can damage. So that, the spike protein is damaging not only the endothelium, which is the lining of your blood vessels, but anything that has a barrier function, such as your epithelial cells in your intestinal tracts. Maybe that's what's going on with these women, because the uterus is a highly vascularized area of the body. I mean, it's intended to nurture an embryo or a fetus.
Sure.
So this spike protein is causing damage in multiple ways. So it's using up your platelets, it's attracting the platelets, creating clots, while at the same time your endothelium is becoming leaky. And so you're both clotting and losing platelets at the same time. And then if the autoimmune component of it kicks in, there's really probably no way to reverse it, as we've seen in some of these fatal outcomes.
I don't I don't see how that could
happen. Almost as if they, I mean, the fact that this protein can interact with heparin, a combined heparin, which is your anti-clotting substance in your body, it can bind to integrins, which are adhesion molecules. They help things hold together, help cells stay together.
Mm-hmm. When you say they bind to them, does that take them out of service, so to speak?
Yeah.
Or does that...
Yeah, it deactivates them.
Neutralizes them, right.
Yeah. But at the same time, the body realizes this is a foreign protein. You know, we need to get rid of it or neutralize it, so it starts attacking it. Mm-hmm. And it just... Yes.
And your,
they put
your
some
body,
thought into
once
this.
You've been, once you've been vaxxed, your body turns into a manufacturing plant for spike proteins. These terribly damaging... Yes.
Yeah, it knows it's foreign, so it's going to try to get rid of it. But then it's also, it has so many similarities, 28 different sequences in this spike protein alone that are homologous, meaning identical, to proteins that are also in the human body. So it's, you're asking your immune system to be able to distinguish in fairly quickly, to save itself, between self and non-self, friend or foe, as these your cells are churning out this foreign protein. I can't see how, number one, there's any benefit to this, and how you're not going to sustain some level of damage, probably lasting damage from this. Either the physical damage from the organs being destroyed or complete immune dysregulation.
All right, here's a sideways question. Is this a naturally occurring protein, the spike protein, or do you have any evidence or suspicion that this protein was created with nanotechnology or whatever? This is a bad one.
Yeah, I think there is evidence to suggest it came out of a lab. It has HIV sequences in it, 18 different subunits. It's got the GP120, which is a envelope protein, glycoprotein 120, which is... That's characteristic of HIV. It has a gag protein for HIV. If that came out of a bat and a pangolin?
No. Forget that, friends. No.
It came out of a lab.
This is a bioweapon. Just understand that. So is the virus that carries it around, at least initially. That's the theory.
The virus... It's just the means of getting it into a cell and having it replicate. Now we're making it real easy. We're just putting in some lipid nanoparticles or another viral vector, an adenovirus, and getting it into people that way. It's the spike protein that's the problem. It's the spike protein that makes the endothelium leaky, causes the clotting, gets into the brain and inflames the brain, destroys the liver.
All right, hold on. I have to take a break, but when we come back, I have the next logical question to follow up on what you just said. This is potentially beyond catastrophic worldwide, potentially. I don't want to go out there any further than that, but we have to examine all possibilities, and that is one. We'll be right back. Hold on. Okay, welcome back. So at this point, I think an argument could be made that the coronavirus, COVID-19, was, as I said in the beginning, the vaccine was a carrier, and the carrier for this virus. And this virus had a job, and that job was to get the spike protein in the body, and the mRNA would change your genetics to order your cells to begin to manufacture this very toxic protein, which soon runs rampant in your body to the extent that you begin to throw it off, shed it, transmit it. You're around someone, they exhale, they cough, they sneeze, and you've got it aerosolized. You can inhale it. And once you inhale a protein, you got it. So this appears to be what's happening. So I guess the big question is, does the inhalation of the spike protein cause your body to begin to manufacture it, or does the protein somehow replicate itself? Remember, it doesn't have the mRNA pushing it, we don't think. if we're right and it's just the spike protein that's being spread, how is that setting up in the body to reproduce itself and cause these rather tragic symptoms that so many women, for example, tens of thousands, are suffering already? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's a big question mark. And I don't know that anybody, I guess they're starting to look at some of these women. They're finally, in the mainstream media at least, acknowledging that there's maybe a problem.
Yeah. Well, it won't last long.
But,
don't worry.
You know, the speed at which they're going about it, it's all very casual. It doesn't seem to be enough to stop this campaign.
Right.
I don't know, but somebody's better start looking at this because it's serious.
To look at it, though, Erica, wouldn't they have to admit that the spike protein is toxic to the body and that it is a problem and that there is something being transmitted, and they don't want to go there?
Well, the powers that be, the big pharma shills that are pushing this, deny that there's any possibility for these vaccines to shed in any way. And that's... that's not...
Do they really? I hadn't seen
yes,
that.
Yes,
wow.
Yes. Yes, that Dr. Larry Pilevsky was called out on making that statement by one of the renowned big pharma shills pushing this thing. But they've got no proof to say that it's not. They haven't done any studies. If you're saying that, prove it. Because what's happening in real life seems to indicate something totally different.
Certainly does.
And we don't
know
what it is. And the fact that unvaccinated people appear to be suffering side effects ranging from headaches, nausea, vomiting, rashes, bruising.
Bleeding.
From being around these people?
Bleeding. Nosebleeds, I guess, too. I think that's...
Yes, no, gushing nosebleeds, not just, annoying nosebleeds.
These are massive hemorrhages. That would suggest a breakdown in the vascular system somewhere.
Both. I think the endothelium is being damaged, becoming leaky. And I think the components within the blood, the platelets and other clotting factors, are somehow being damaged, perhaps because of the liver. I mean, a lot of these proteins in the blood are synthesized in the liver.
Synthesized.
So I think you've got two things going on here.
As in reproduced, synthesized in the liver?
Yeah, the liver is responsible for generating a lot of your blood proteins, a lot of the clotting factors.
Oh, my. That's a new one on me.
So it seems like there's probably some liver involvement, but I don't think it's limited to that. I think the vasculature is being damaged also.
So this, okay, I get around someone who's been vaxxed and they're fully set up as a machine now, and they're producing this highly toxic and in some cases, in many cases, fatal protein. How is the protein acting in my body unvaccinated? What's it doing to recreate itself, to proliferate? How do you think that might be happening? In the liver? Or is it somehow able to get into your cells and also instruct the cells, like the mRNA supposedly does, to recreate the spike proteins? Something is happening here, and we haven't figured that out yet. Any guesses?
Yeah, I find it hard to believe that just inhaling the protein itself would be enough to produce these symptoms, these very obvious outward symptoms of some kind of reaction.
Yeah, okay, the wife. Remember that one? Of course.
Yes.
The wife
yes.
gets vaccinated. The husband doesn't. He goes to sleep after she's been vaxxed. He wakes up in the morning, has bruises. These are they're below your skin. They're bruises. They're bleeding. They're hemorrhages under the skin, all over
yes.
his body.
So something's being exchanged. The reverse
oh, yes.
was true, too.
Yeah.
There was an incident where The guy got vaxxed and the girlfriend didn't. And this was an older woman, 67, I think, had been in menopause for some time. She went to the boyfriend's for a weekend. When she came home Sunday night, her uterus was burning and she filled the toilet with blood. Something serious
All
is
right.
going
well,
on.
And then we have the mother who got mother with a 2-year-old, still breastfeeding. She got vaxxed. The kid dies.
Yes.
Dies. This is really incredibly insidious, this whole thing. Let's get back to Dr. Michael Yeadon. I want to get to the end of this. It's important.
I noticed at the time, I came across it a couple of months ago, but you would think the vaccine manufacturers should have done their homework and checked whether or not the piece of dead virus that they were having human cells manufacture through these gene-based vaccines would not itself be harmful. But it seems to me, I can only assume they missed it. And what these vaccines all do is they encourage your body to manufacture that spike protein or part of that spike protein and stick it on the outside of a cell or release it from those cells. And so it struck me at the time that could be both an explanation for some of the thromboembolic disorders. And furthermore, you could expect that you would get some very serious cases. And let me just explain why.
I want to play that again. Hold on. That's very important.
A sort of docking receptor on the outside of human cells, which it uses then to enter the cell. It's not a passive protein at all. It's biologically active. Spike protein is biologically active. It can be described as fusogenic. That is, it prompts cells that it contacts to stick together, even including blood platelets. And as you probably will gather, once blood platelets start sticking together, that can be the initiation of a blood clot. And furthermore, those spike proteins are capable of initiating some of the steps of the blood coagulation pathway. So this is potentially a lethal combination. I didn't know it at the time. I came across it a couple of months ago. But you would think the vaccine manufacturers should have done their homework and checked whether or not the piece of dead virus that they were having human cells manufacture through these gene-based vaccines would not itself be harmful. But it seems to me, I can only assume they missed it.
I think, Michael, you better reassume. I don't think they all missed it at all.
And what these vaccines all do is they encourage your body to manufacture that spike protein or part of that spike protein and stick it on the outside of a cell or release it from those cells. And so it struck me at the time that could be both an explanation for some of the thromboembolic disorders. And furthermore, you could expect that you would get some very serious cases. And let me just explain why. By contrast with traditional vaccines, where you would be given a defined dose of a dead pathogen, so you'd know how much you were getting. With these gene-based vaccines, you'll get a defined dose of it, but depending on where it lands in your body as it distributes, how efficiently it's taken up, how efficiently it's copied, how well that genetic message is translated into the spike protein, you could end up with quite different outcomes. And I believe some people were unfortunate and perhaps had a greater distribution of the vaccine into perhaps certain vulnerable vessels in their brain. And perhaps in some of those people, the vaccine was taken up well and copied efficiently. And if you furthermore imagine some of those patients were perhaps in an unstable position, they could easily be prompted to form a clot. That's all you need to hypothesize in order to explain the deaths in healthy young women aged 20 to 50 with an extremely unusual cerebral vein sinus thrombosis. But I think those side effects are occurring in other blood vessels that are moving relatively slowly. Certainly there are some in the abdomen, the so-called splanchnic vein, and any slow-moving blood vessel, if you're unlucky enough to have a disproportionately large dose land there and to be efficiently taken up and efficiently copied, now you've got an amount of the spike protein that you really don't want in the inside of your blood vessels lurking there, able to perhaps prompt the start of a serious adverse event. So
that's exactly what you just said, Erica, about the endothelial cells. Exactly.
Contention that all of the gene-based vaccines that work fundamentally like that, that they harness the body's ability to manufacture the spike protein or part of it, I think all of them should be regarded as having, to an extent, a class risk. I think you should regard all of them as having that risk. And so one of the things I've been both annoyed and furious and terrified all at the same time is this increasing push by government, certainly in the United Kingdom, and I know in other places, to push this vaccine down and down into the younger and younger population. And yet we know from the work of Dr. John Ioannidis and others that the strongest risk factor for becoming very ill and dying after being infected by this virus is age. So if you're younger than about 70 and you don't have any pre-existing illnesses, you're really very unlikely to die. In fact, less likely to die with this virus than influenza. So why would anybody want to give it to someone under 50 who's well, under 40 who's well, or under 30 who's well? And I'm afraid my government is hell-bent on vaccinating everybody from the age of 18 and over. And at the same time, I think it's briefly paused, but there is an ongoing pediatric study as well. And of course, that why would they do that? It's because they want to vaccinate all the children as well. And I put it to you and any listener, can you think of a benign explanation for why you would want to give an experimental use authorized gene-based vaccine to millions, tens of millions of people who cannot possibly die if they ran into this virus? And the answer is, no, you can't, can you? So if you can't think of a benign explanation for what's happening, and remember, it's not the only bad thing that's happening, you have to start looking for malign explanations. And I think I've come across what it is, and it's this damn vaccine passport. Now, there's a lot of talk about vaccine passports, and they're just nonsense. Let me just explain. If you're a vulnerable person and you've chosen to be vaccinated, and all has gone well, and it will in most cases, you are now protected. You do not need to know the immune status of anyone around you in a football game or a theatre or a shop. You wouldn't benefit from the presence of a vaccine passport in the hands of anyone around you because you're protected by your vaccination. If, on the other hand, you've chosen not to be vaccinated because you're young and healthy and you've looked at the statistics and you're not at risk from the virus, you don't need to know anyone else's immune status either. You don't need to see their vaccine passport. So neither the vaccinated nor the unvaccinated benefit at all from vaccine passports. So I can tell you who will benefit: the people who are pushing it on you. And guess what? If vaccine passports come into being, there will be the world's first common format digital ID for every person on the planet, and at least one editable health-related flag, which will be, is your vaccine passport valid or not? And then whoever controls that database can set the algorithm to allow someone who's got a valid vaccine passport to cross a boundary, like an international border, or getting into a shop or a sports game, and it will prohibit people who don't have that from doing those things. I've just explained to you that it doesn't benefit any of the people, but it definitely benefits the totalitarian controllers who have that database. It's never been like this in the world before, and I believe if it goes live, we'll not only be standing at the gates of hell, we'll just be given a little push and in we'll go. Because once you're on this system and your whole life is permissioned by your status on this system, have you got a valid vaccine or not, then you can be made to do absolutely anything. So let me just imagine this situation in 6 months' time. Your vaccine passport app pings and there's a message there that says, Dr. Yeadon, it's time to come down for your top-up vaccine, which we'll talk about in a minute. And there's another little ping and it says, and please bring your 10-year-old grandchild down. We've noticed they've not been vaccinated. The final comment will be, just need to let you know, if you don't comply with these two requirements, within 3 weeks, your vaccine passport will expire and you'll be excluded from your life and all parts of your life. So You might think that you wouldn't let your grandchild be vaccinated, but I've just told you, I've shown you, if you let this damn thing go live, you'll be coerced into doing it. You'll have no way out. You'll have to comply. And then why would you want a top-up vaccine? This is the thing that really catalyzed my recent series of interviews. I know as an immunologist, I would say one of my strongest suits is immunology. And I'm absolutely confident that all the stories they are telling you around the world about variants is a lie. It's a complete fraud. And I can.
Okay. All the stories about these wicked, evil variants, according to Dr. Michael Yeadon, are lies. Variants are no problem. They're lies. Erica, real quick, and then I'll get back to him. Anything to say about what you just heard?
Yeah, in principle, I would agree with that. I think it's just setting the stage to justify, you know, another round of shots to keep up with the variants. I don't know what we're getting. I do believe we're getting chimeric viruses out of these injections.
Now,
you know,
let me tell
more
everyone what
not,
that means.
I don't know.
Another way, our body always has viruses in it. Thousands of different kinds of, maybe tens of thousands of different kinds of viruses. They can combine with either the mRNA factors therein or the spike protein, and you have a new organism, a different virus, a chimera. That's a chimeric virus, and that virus, God only knows what it can possibly do. It can certainly be spread to other people. And that may be part
protein.
Of the spreading.
That's
right.
That's the interesting thing. The protein that they're asking, or the vaccine shots are asking your body to produce, is a fusion protein, the spike protein. That enables a virus to get into the cell and take over its machinery and begin to replicate. So you're basically giving, you know, an added advantage to your existing palette of viruses.
Exactly. All right, here we go.
Exemplify. So we're all being told about variants, the Brazilian, the Kent, South African, and so on. I just ask people just to take a deep breath. Recognize this is it's a big virus. It consists of what's called amino acids, 10,000 of them in strings, and then they're all folded up to form the characteristic shape that you know and hate. If you go and look for the virus that is most different from the one originally sequenced in Wuhan about 16 months ago, you will find that the most different variant is only 0.3% different. So it's 99.7% identical. They're all of them 99.7% identical to the original. And you might be thinking, that doesn't sound like enough to escape the human immune system. And you're right, it's not, and I can prove it, that the 2003 SARS virus is related to SARS-CoV-2. They differ by about 20%, 20. So about 80 times as much variation between those two viruses and any of the variants of the current one. And I can assure you that when immunology researchers found scores of people who'd been infected by SARS in 2003, they took blood samples from these volunteers. They confirmed two important things. One, all of the survivors still had really good immune memory to the virus they'd encountered 17 years ago, which is what you'd expect. But what was wonderful is they all also possessed what's called cross immunity. That is, their immune system recognized the new virus. And I'm not surprised. The human immune system essentially takes multiple pictures of any pathogen that it encounters, often between 15 and 30 pictures. And basically, none of the variants change more than a couple of those pictures. So when you encounter the variant, having been immunized by infection or vaccination, it's impossible. It's not just implausible. It's impossible that your body doesn't recognize that variant as something it's seen before.
Okay. Final comments. We have about 2 minutes left, Erica. And that was some very important information, and I really thank you for coming by and helping us analyze it. He is extraordinarily heroic, this man.
Yeah, he, you know, along with at least 10 others. They're nailing it. Everything they're saying is accurate. They're being truthful and honest. There's no financial incentive for them to do any of what they're doing. I mean, they are really in fear for the fate of humanity. And as far as a vaccine goes for this, I mean, it's ludicrous because they've never successfully made a vaccine for an RNA virus. Our RNA viruses are prone to mutations. And, you know, the antibody route is the wrong way to go for this. It's going to limit your ability to respond to changing mutations. When you're stuck in this one pattern and you're using up your immunological energy and capacity to deal with one strain that's now probably obsolete because of all the different variations.
Okay, I've got a number of questions. He does go on in the end of this interview to talk about how people can refuse the vaccination. He said it's very simple. You just refuse it. It doesn't fit with my worldview. I'm a sovereign being. I do not choose to have that put into my system. And I know all of you saw that, or all of you who saw that video, that the Danes, some researchers there, got hold of a vial and they amplified it under the microscope by 2,000 power and looked at it. And what they found would be enough to scare anybody out of their wits. It's bad stuff.
Yeah, the lack of transparency on behalf of these manufacturers is appalling. You know, you're asking the entire population to take this on blind faith,
right,
that you're being injected with what they say they have in these vials.
It's worse than asking. They're demanding.
They're demanding. And it's going to get worse because the Biden administration wanted to have, still wants to have, everybody, or 90% of the population fully vaxxed by July. And they're hitting a wall now. And expect the coercive measures to intensify they try to reach that number. The harder they push, the more they're going to get the pushback, thank God.
I think people
are catching on.
Let's hope. We may not have the number of people who are capable of pushing back, so those of us who will push back must double our efforts.
It's going to intensify.
Two quickies here. I got a question from one of our listeners, Dan. Must we assume the blood supply in all hospitals is contaminated? And I personally would say yes.
If you've had these vaccines, you are allowed to donate. I personally know a few people who have done that within days of having the vaccine.
Oh, no.
Now they're recommending that you wait 2 weeks and be symptom free. But yes, you are not prohibited from donating blood. So I would not trust the blood supply or the organ supply for that matter.
No, I wouldn't have trusted the blood supply in any case. Too many years of studying this as a non-scientist. Last question. You mentioned last night that the interchange between humans and animals there's always been a species barrier wall, an animal so-called and a human. We don't trade viruses very often. It just doesn't happen. But this one apparently is very well at home moving from human to animal pets.
Maybe. It possibly. I mean, we need more answers. This could be a 5G thing, this bleeding thing. We don't know. I mean, dogs and cats are going to be affected by these frequencies. Maybe it's something in their food. We just don't know. And you know, we're working blind because these manufacturers won't be transparent.
Well, I hope Michael Yeadon lives a long and healthy life and is able to continue with his updates, and we really are indebted to him, all of us, for telling it like
Definitely.
It really is. Yeah. Thanks, Erica. We'll talk soon. Thank you very much.
Okay, Jeff. Have a good night.
Okay. All right. Erica Kahn, and the link under her name to the Australian document is active now, so go to Guests and take a look at that, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.